Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to week three of our C++ and DirectX game development courses. Today, we're actually going to be taking a look at some really cool stuff, blending in models.
Should be good.
Should be a lot of fun.
Get some, whatever you want in there now.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to do a quick little intro on ourselves and what we're going to be doing today. So for those of you that don't know who I am, my name is Mickey McDonald. I'm an indie game developer and technical evangelist with Microsoft Canada. Basically a fancy way of saying I get to do cool stuff like this and make tutorials and show you guys all the cool stuff that you can do with these game dev software. Brian's with me today. Brian, you want to do a little intro on yourself?
Sure. I'm a software engineer and a game developer and a college instructor. recently, I've been working with an indie team and we rolled out a game called Rollers of the Realm. But in the past, I've worked with about every major publisher that still exists, doing AAA games and everything else in between. And yeah, now most of my days are helping out, doing things like this, or teaching the next generation of game developers.
Very cool. So today, our course topics are going to look like this. So first, we're going to start with an introduction, getting started. We're going to talk about kind of what you need, where we're going to be taking this today, sort of thing. Then we're going to move into blending and transparency. So we're going to show you how you can get that into your game and get that up and running. Followed by creating models and the OBJ format. Which we'll explain a little bit more in detail, and actually, I believe we're going to do it via text, which is quite interesting. It should be pretty neat to see.
Well, when you don't have an artist around and you make your own models in text, it's fine.
Exactly. And then followed by, we're going to show you how to use the model importer, so you can actually import models that you find out on the web and stuff like that.
Right. We're going to take a model, get it in, and use it for our power-ups.
Very cool. So our target audience for today is, the student, beginner, indie developers, basically any developer that's trying to look to take their skills to that next step, right? They're maybe they've used Unity, they've used those type of engines, and they're just looking for something a little bit more, and they want to get down to the bare bones, right? So that's kind of who we're targeting with this today. Prerequisites, some basic C++ knowledge is definitely going to go a long way when you get into DirectX. Some experience in Visual Studio can't hurt, that's for sure.
Yep.
Of course, it's always nice to know a little bit about linear algebra and 3D coordinate systems when you get into 3D design, especially as low level as we're getting today.
Yeah, importing models by hand.
Exactly. If you know the Cartesian coordinate system and stuff like that, it's going to go a long way to understanding what we're talking about today.
That's right.
Basic 3D modeling experience, if you've used something like Maya or even Milkshape, that's the one that I that I always go to because Maya can be a little bit intense. Requirements, basically, if you've finished the first, like our intro course that we did about a year ago, we're kind of building everything off of that. So it's a really good idea to kind of go through these in order so you kind of can build it along with us and you're not being left out and don't understand where we're coming from week to week. So a little bit about the MVA community. I'm sure you guys know what it is considering you're watching this video, but I absolutely love it. I've learned a pile of stuff on here and I continue to learn it. I love it. It's constantly being updated, new training going up weekly. So definitely check it out. They got over 2.6 million registered users now.
Which is funny because if you look at the first one we did, that slide said over a million. So that means in the last less than a year or whatever, it's gone up. It's more than double.
1.6 million. Yeah, that's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really cool. It's a great source for knowledge.
Yeah, there's a lot of information, a lot of topics.
I remember you were saying yesterday that you were on LinkedIn.
Oh yeah.
And you saw that people are actually starting to put MVA in as their education on and LinkedIn.
So as part of their education, so that other people know like what they've done or what courses they've completed, because there's a course section you can fill out all that in LinkedIn as well. So people could look at it and see, look, I've gone the extra step or extra mile beyond my normal education. I've gone out and
done this. I spent 4 hours listening to Mickey and Brian talk about game dev.
Who doesn't like making games?
Awesome. And then, at the bottom there of the slide, you're watching this. Why not earn some extra points? If you take the code there and put it in, it's game dev blending, you're going to get an extra 50 MVA points for just watching this event. Not too bad. So what do you say we dive right in and we get started with the introduction and...
Sure. And it's always good.
So the module overview for this is we're going to go through our goals for the day. We'll talk about expanding the prototype.
And you know, where we're at,
where we're going to be going with this. You know, making sure we have the right tools, verifying that we've got all our code and everything like that. And then at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about optimization tips. So goals for the day. Well, simply we want to expand the Sumo DX prototype, right, that we've been working with over the past few weeks. We just want to keep building this out and kind of expanding it, putting more features in, you know, stuff like that. So it's basically where we want to go with it. Basically, we're going to take a look at how to build a C++ game for the Windows Store using DirectX 11.2.
Right, that's always sort of the main goal.
And throughout, we're going to talk about, you know, common structures, patterns, and implementations that we've used to develop our own games and, you know, found quite useful.
That's right.
So basically, that's what we're going to be going through for the day. That's our goals. So let's go ahead and take a look at expanding the game.
So currently, I mean, we have been improving this prototype over the last couple of weeks as well. So we started out with just a single player game with auto support back a year ago, auto save support. And then the simple menus and the high score system went in, the basic environmental and audio effects. Now we've got those in. We've put in some power-ups and the push mechanics, so we've deepened the game mechanics themselves. And we're going to continue along that trend. And today we're going to look at rendering a pixel shader that can allow you to do sort of sprites, so a flat 2D image on a quad. But usually there's some transparency in there, so you don't want to see the full quad of a white square with a little guy on it or an archway or a rock or something like that. So we're going to clip out that and just leave just the image that you want behind.
If you're interested in a little bit more about what the shaders are, if you roll back to our last week's... Make sure you've watched that, because we're going to be building off that a lot, and we really go in depth on the shaders. So if you haven't done that already, go ahead and pause this video and jump over and check out that one so you can keep up to date with what we're doing.
And then after that, that doesn't require blending, technically, or any kind of translucency or anything to do that, because we're literally going to use a function to cut out any pixel that is not perfectly opaque or something like that. So then we're going to go to the next step, which is to actually use blending and transparency on your graphics card to get two things to blend together. We're going to apply it to the power-ups again. We'll make them sort of like goo, like a little I don't know, gelatin cube or something like that, so that it blends with whatever it's sitting in front of from the camera's point of view. Global fog is another one we're going to quickly look at and put in there. It adds a lot to most environments. It also has a lot of practical uses besides just, ooh, fog. It's actually used to do all kinds of other things, and it was actually a crutch used many years back to hide a lot of inadequacies.
Still a crutch I use today.
A lot of inadequacies in the ability to render quickly or render a lot of terrain, or while you're loading, you could, you know, it's still far enough off, you could disguise it popping in and so on. So global fog has a lot of different uses besides mood and just making it look like fog. So we're going to take a look at that and discuss those. And then finally, we're going to do the external model support, which will take a little bit of time just to talk about how you can get a model in a nice readable format, and then how to actually import it into the game using the framework that's already out there.
Awesome. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So why don't we demo what we've got now, like what we did last week, and okay, then it can they see kind of where the starting point is.
Sure. So I'll just go over here, and I got to go back to the end of yesterday, and we'll bring that one up. Where'd my solution file go? There we are. So this was the end of, or not yesterday, last week, I guess, technically. And here we go. So we got all our stuff. We can just fire this up. Choo-choo-choo. And so again, this is after we've added the extra game mechanics with the push and power-up systems. That was our last demonstration that we did last week. So there's one of those power-ups, which speeds me up a little bit, so I can go a little bit faster. I'll grab this other one so I go even faster. There we go. Then I can push them around. I can also slap them around, so I can cause a quick shift. And I can do that whenever I'm touching them. I can do it in either direction as well, so I can sort of bang them around the other way, and we just shove them around. So that was where we left it last time. We also had done a bunch of effects to the to the sky just to show you different shader effects and techniques, like you discussed, like thermal vision and embossing and so on. Which, of course, I've disabled all of them now because they don't affect the gameplay.
Yeah, we wanted to make it look normal.
Right. And that's where we left off.
Very cool. So let's move on to making sure we've got the right tools.
Sure.
So for our tools here, what we're going to need today is we're going to need, obviously, a copy of Visual Studio 2013. You're going to need Windows 8.1.
Yes.
You should have the Windows SDK downloaded and installed. This is basically all the stuff that we've used in the previous examples, so kind of assuming that you've already got all that.
Yeah, if you've run any of them, then you must have.
Yeah. Optionally, it would be nice to have a some software, 3D modeling software that supports OBJ. So again, I'll shout out Maya as being one that definitely does it, as well
3D
as
3D Studio Max.
3D Studio
Pretty much
Max.
All of them do. It's an open format that's been around for a long
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Blender is actually another one that will work.
I think Maya has it, but you have to enable a plugin. It's actually disabled by default.
Yeah. So, you know, mess around with that if you can find something there. It's not necessary, but it would be nice to have if you had it.
Bing it if you have any questions. I'm sure there's tons of tutorials.
Yeah, exactly. And then DirectX Mesh's Mesh Convert Tool.
Right, which is another one that's an online example that Microsoft has put up for other uses previously, and we're actually just going to harness it to convert those OBJ files into a readable binary format that we can load in with the framework itself.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. We want to make sure that you have everything, so if you haven't, go ahead and go to my GitHub. It's github.scruffyfern/sumodx4. That's going to be the code that we're going to be using for today. Yes. That's actually the finished code, so if you download it and run it, you'll actually see the final product for today. But it's got everything in there, and you can kind of walk through it with us.
Yeah, that way you can follow along.
Yeah. Go ahead and fire that up in this, open up the solution file in Visual Studio 2013. And as always, make sure you run the game at least once, make sure everything's going, just in case we put any bugs in there and everything's not working and you don't want to have to.
It wasn't a bug. The upload may be corrupted, right? It must have been the upload.
Must have been the upload, yes. All right, so let's move on to the last section in this module, optimization tips. And we kind of threw this in here because we wanted to talk a little bit about ways that you can kind of optimize games, mostly because we're working with some really low-level stuff here, and a lot of times when you get to this level, you start to think, how can I optimize this, right? So a couple of things around optimization. Optimization comes in three main forms, right? You've got your memory optimization, right? So making sure that you're keeping things small, passing it around memory in the right ways so you're not using extra memory when you don't need to.
And that counts RAM as well as your hard drive space or disk space.
Yeah, video RAM in your computer. Yeah, it's memory in general.
Yeah.
Then you got your CPU optimizations, which are anything that's, you know, running on the CPU. You can optimize that to make it run a little bit quicker, or, you know, things like multiplication over division, stuff like that, right?
Yep.
Little things like that can actually really speed up your game. And then, of course, you got the GPU optimization. And that's the kind of one we're going to be taking a little bit more deep look at, because we are focusing a lot on the DirectX stuff and the graphics, so we thought, you know, taking a look at that.
Yeah, and we're not going to necessarily dive into a whole bunch of complex optimization, because a lot of optimizations are specific to what it is you're doing or the function you're using or the equation you're using.
Exactly.
And things like that. So it's more guidelines on techniques and things to watch for or things to plan for ahead of time so you don't, you know, do it a slower way or something like that.
Yeah, and with optimization, it's all about balance, right? It's all about balancing how things are working with one another and keeping the load generally steady across the entire...
Those three areas.
Yeah, those entire three areas,
yeah,
right?
Right.
It's also about removing bottlenecks, right? So there's times that you're going to see that you have a specific bottleneck. That might be when you're passing models to the graphics card. You know, maybe if you're drawing a scene of a bunch of trees or something and you're trying to push all those at once, you're going to see a bottleneck,
and,
right?
Yeah, and you'll hear people describe that as being CPU bound or GPU bound or memory bound. That's the terminology they're saying when the bottleneck is here. Everything else is running fine. We have enough memory. We have enough CPU. But unfortunately, I'm overloading the graphics card, so I'm GPU bound at that point. And you need to try to change your techniques on what it is you're doing so that the CPU can do a little bit more of the work maybe from the GPU for you to lighten the load, or maybe it's because you're pumping too much and storing too much onto the GPU and you need to store more in memory and access things a little bit differently. And it's always that, you know.
It's that balancing act.
Yeah,
definitely.
Big three-way triangle of balancing.
And that's another great point too, right, is when you implement these optimizations, first of all, make sure it actually helps your game, right?
Yes.
Like, make sure you're not, the optimization doesn't just completely blow the gameplay.
Yeah,
right?
You should always check, well, first, you shouldn't be doing an optimization unless you know it's slow.
Like, yeah.
Sometimes you'll look at it and be like, I think I can do that a better way. But does it matter? Is it actually slow? You should check to see if it is, you know, time it out with little timers and so on. And then after you actually do or apply an optimization, then you should see, has the load changed? If it was a memory sort of thing, am I actually loading less? Or is there less stored in memory? Is it faster? Yeah, there might be less in memory, but maybe that's because you're just constantly flipping things in and out, and now that CPU is overloading because it's way slower.
Yeah.
So just because you, sometimes when it's the balancing act, you really just want to reduce memory, and it doesn't matter that the CPU is doing more work.
Mm-hmm.
But other times when you're just trying to optimize what's there, and it's not a balancing problem, and you're just trying to reduce everything to improve overall the whole system, then you got to make sure that you're not impacting something else by accident.
Exactly. It's test and verify. Make sure that what you think is happening is actually happening, and you're not, you know, like you said, you're not overloading the CPU or GPU by trying to save some memory. Generally, you should optimize your game later in the development process rather than sooner, right? Like, it's not a good idea when you're still in your prototyping stage to start worrying about optimization.
Unless you're already, you know, running at 5 frames per second, sure.
Yeah.
That's usually because you have a major issue, or you accidentally did something, not because you need to optimize a well-worked system or something like that.
Yeah, and like, you can spend a lot of time worrying about the optimization, and it actually slows down the process of building the game, because you're so focused on that one little optimization, you're not worried about the gameplay or the mechanics and everything else that is really important.
Right, and then on top of that, because you've implemented various optimizations, that can confuse other programmers or new people that you bring onto the project, because most teams will grow as the project lengthens, right? Mm-hmm. As you go through the project, you'll bring more people on. Sometimes people have to leave because they get sick or family thing, or they move to another job or something like that, and you have to bring new team members on. If you have a lot of specialized optimizations that are doing fancy tricks like ramming 3 chunks of data into the same variable, you know, because you know it, you don't actually use up all that space, somebody else might be trying to fix a bug or looking at what's going on, and they'll see that, I think that he probably didn't mean to do that, and then they'll fix it,
yeah,
even though it's actually the way it's supposed to be, and they'll break it apart, and then they can cause bugs because of that, because now whatever data you're putting in there maybe got lost, or he did it in a different way, and something else is impacted. So it can be very tricky, and the code just usually becomes a lot less readable or user-friendly when you're reading it, just because of the way we apply certain optimizations. So doing them early on just means you're going to have that confusion, those possibility for errors and so on the whole rest of your project.
And another thing too is, like, if you're optimizing one chunk of code and you're spending all that time on it, you might not even realize where the actual bottleneck in your game is.
Right, yeah. You just looked at it and said, I'm doing this slow. I know I can do better. But it actually might be okay because it's using up some more CPU power instead of GPU power.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's much faster if I do it on the GPU. Well, your GPU is already overloaded. You don't want to do that.
Exactly.
But if you're not checking, or you don't know where it's going to go, because a lot of times the games will, if you're working, say, on a power for an enemy, okay, it's fine. But then maybe you didn't realize that the designers had planned to use 30 of them in a boss fight later on. And now when they're all doing that, now that's a problem. So you've got to optimize that function,
mm-hmm,
or something like that. So you can't always predict where in game code anyways, where these, what's going to cause a bottleneck necessarily. You should always try to make things
It's important to evaluate your game and check the performance of the game before you start to optimize. You got to actually look for these bottlenecks. Don't just, like you said, don't just look at the code and go, I don't know, I think I can do that better.
Doing it once a week or so as you go through development, just so you have a recording of, here's where we were running in this level. This is what the stats we were getting. Here's how much memory we're using. Here was our frame rate. You know, here's how much memory we're using on the GPU. Just having those printed out and saved in a log, you know, every week or so through development means you can see the trends, you can see what's happening, And, you know, whenever something is going critical, you can start to let people know, you know, be careful when we're using this area or that area until it gets back under check and so on. Because things shift, things change, levels get dropped, boss fights get changed.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, just checking it every week and keeping a snapshot of your current state so that you can always see and go back and say, wait, you know, like even adding something to the game might change that performance hint. You can be like, oh, now we need to worry about optimizing that.
Yep.
Very cool. So let's get into a little bit of ways that you can kind of optimize, right? So the first one I want to talk about is the flyweight method. Now, this comes from the Gang of Four. If you go back, you read their book on programming methodologies. It kind of talks about flyweight as being this really cool pattern that a lot of software engineers use. Well, I took a look at it and I was like, well, this is actually a really good pattern for us game developers, right? Now, what flyweight does, it kind of, if you think about what the name is, it kind of lets you know what it's going to do. It makes it lighter on the GPU, right? It's basically what we're trying to do. We're trying to lighten the load on our GPU and our memory, right? So what we're going to do is, like the example here, if you've got a bunch of trees, right, and you've got trees that have like a mesh, a bark, leaves, and the only real difference here is their parameters, like their position, maybe their color, maybe a texture. That's the only real
scale, perhaps.
Scale, maybe, yeah, right. Those are the only things that are really changing. It doesn't make sense to have each one of those models and all that data pushed up to the graphics card for every single tree. Think about it, if you've got a forest out there with a few thousand trees, yeah, how much memory that's going to waste, how many cycles that's going to waste on the GPU. So what flyweight does is we take a look at it and we say, okay, you know what? I'm using the same model, the same mesh, the same leaves, whatever it might
be. Textures,
the same textures. Whatever it might be, I'm using all that same stuff. So let's push that once to the graphics card, and then what we're gonna do is we're going to point to that for every instance of that object, right? But all we're going to do is change these specific parameters. So when I pass it to the GPU, I say, look for this model that you already have, but all I want you to do is change its position, change its scale maybe, change its color, whatever it might be, right? So what you're doing is you're lightening that load on the GPU because the GPU says, okay, I only have to save one copy of this in memory. I don't have to duplicate it over and over and over again.
That's right.
So flyweight is huge for saving performance on the GPU.
And memory.
And memory, yeah. Yes. Another big one is instance batching or pooling. So what this one basically does is you create a finite amount of an objects and then you reuse them over and over and over again. Right? So this is extremely useful in languages that have garbage collectors, because what happens is your garbage collector comes along and it cleans up the data whenever it feels like it, right? It doesn't just come along when you think it's going to come along. So there might be times where you've created, you know, if I've got if you see here, I've got a little image there at the bottom with a really cool 80s haircut. Every time he shoots a bullet, in the bad example, we're creating the bullet, we're shooting it, it hits its target or it hits something and we destroy it.
Yes.
Right?
Delete the model, clean it all up.
Yeah. And then it's actually sitting in memory, because if you have a garbage collected language, it's actually still going to sit in memory until the garbage collector comes along and says, okay, clean it. Right? So you could, if you're shooting you know, one of those machine guns that's got thousands of bullets a second coming out of it, and you're creating new bullets every time you shoot, you're going to fill up your memory pretty quick.
Right.
So what object pooling does is we only create a finite amount. So I only, like in for instance, with a gun, you know how many bullets you have on a clip. Right, generally. So why not only create that amount of bullets? Store them in a pool. Every time you shoot, take one out of the pool, use it, right? Make it, you know, give it a velocity, all that stuff. It hits something. Instead of destroying it, just uninitialize it and put it, like set it back to its defaults and put it back in the pool.
Right.
Right, and then when you need it again, it's there. So, you know, instead of creating 1,000 bullets, I create 5 bullets, and the user never knows. They don't see any difference.
Right.
But memory-wise, I've saved a pile of time.
And that has been around for a long time. It's not just a DirectX or a newer thing. You could, if you play really, really old arcade games way back, you could only shoot so many times, and if you missed, those bullets would just keep going and you can't fire. And as soon as one of them disappears, then you can fire a third one again or whatever. Yeah, I mean, there was limits on the amount of memory you had back then and same kind of things there. We're just doing it now for a sort of a different reason, just so that we don't have to do the loading and pushing in and out and instead just reusing the objects. And you can still make sure you're within your memory constraints because you can set all these pools to make sure that in total, all of the memory you use is less than whatever memory you have on that console or the device or whatever.
Exactly. So yeah, it's definitely a good thing to use. And like you said, it's not just a DirectX thing. This can be used in any engine, in any language. Yep. It's definitely something to take a look at when you're trying to optimize for memory. Another big one is sprite and texture batching, or sprite atlasing,
yep.
or whatever you might want to call it. It's all pretty much the same thing. Basically, what this is we're going to combine multiple sprites or textures into a single image.
Right.
So if you take a look here, I've got one image that has a pile of different textures in it. Now, it wouldn't make any sense for me to take each one of those little images and have it as a separate file. Right.
Well, I mean, that's how the artist made it sometimes, right?
I'm sure that's how it came
to
me.
Yeah, there you go.
But of course, I want to optimize it. I don't want to have to load, 1,000 files at the beginning of my game because I need all these textures. It's going to be slow. It's going to be tedious. It's going to take up a lot of memory.
And that's actually important for some web games and so mm-hmm. on as well. Not just, again, this isn't just a DirectX thing, but in some browsers, you can only stream so many files at once. So if you're trying to load 6 textures, you can't also load the sound effect you need.
Exactly.
Or stream it to the player.
And a lot of people have, we don't all live in a 32 megabit downstream world, right? You're not always going to have that super fast internet. So there's times, especially when you're on web games and you're loading all those assets from the web, you want to keep them as small and as compact as possible. Right. And this is one really good way of doing that.
So yeah. this lets you use the space a little bit better per mm-hmm. texture as well. You can see in the image there's sort of tower tops, which is like top left corner, and then down one, that square. You can see all the little twisty tower tops sort of fitting in and using up as much space as possible. Not everywhere are we using all the space yet, but that's where we'll put other ones as they
exactly.
come online. We'll fill in the black gaps and the black areas with more of the textures for the wood or floors or stone. I don't see any gravel yet. We can put some road stuff in there. And then the nice thing is that now you can push this texture across once to your graphics card, and basically that could be all of the imagery you need to do all of the stuff in your city.
Yeah, so if you think about that, if you work that with the flyweight model, right, you've got flyweight where you're only pushing one model, and then you use this sprite batching and you only push the one sprite, or textures,
texture.
Right? Texture file. Now multiple models can talk to that texture file. So you've only uploaded one of each thing, but it can be used by thousands of objects.
Right, exactly. And that saves you time again, because the sending and accessing memory is always slower.
Less swapping, less streaming, a lot of, it's just...
These textures are probably stored on your hard drive sometimes, depending on, again, how much memory you're using and the device you're running it on. So that has to spin up if it's a hard...
Yeah. And one of the big bottlenecks in any system is usually when you're talking to the hard drive. That's usually one of those bottlenecks that you want to watch out for. You want to do as little seeking and reading from the hard drive as possible.
Or off any disk.
Off any
physical
disk, really,
format.
Yeah. So that's a little bit about optimization. Hopefully that kind of gave you some hints to take a look at if you are having issues with optimization. We just kind of wanted to open your eyes to what the possibilities out there and kind of let you know that, yes, when we're writing this code, we're trying to do it in a way that's readable and legible, but there is little ways to optimize it around.
That's right. Yeah, it's more like topics to think about when you go to lay out how you're going to do these larger engine systems. These are just some of the optimization topics to keep in mind. Am I going to do this in the right way? Am I forward thinking enough to plan it out so that I don't have to go back and overhaul all of this stuff? That's why we wanted to point it out, is so you can do it up front as opposed to later on down the line.
Yeah, you should be thinking about that. And of course, these aren't the only optimizations out there. Go ahead and do a quick Bing search on optimization and you'll see a pile of tutorials and a pile of explanations. And again, not all of them are going to work for your situation, right? Some of them may not. So.
And you don't have to limit yourself to just looking for game optimizations for DirectX 11.2 or anything like that, because it's a theory and a process that you're implementing. So you can look at a lot of the older ones from the last generation, which will all be DirectX 9 basically in terms of the console generation, and you can look at those and apply those same techniques. You just have to update the code, whatever it is in, but it's the framework by which you set things up and how you think about it and the processes that you're doing that you're concerned with. So it's still a transferable technique all the way forward. I mean, we've been doing texture batching and sprite batching for many years, all the way back, you know.
Go back to the NES days and stuff like that.
Yeah, all the way back to the first consoles even, and arcade systems as well, I'm sure.
Well, hopefully you enjoyed that. I think now would be a good time to take a quick 10-minute break. And then when we come back, we're going to dive into blending and some transparency.
Sounds good.
Awesome. See you in 10.